It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. I'd like to welcome you to this program. I'm broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, we may have a newsmaker update with Ray McGovern on how our Attorney General, Eric Holder, in effect, has given a complete whitewash to all crimes conducted in Afghanistan and Iraq, and even those individuals who were shown to have been complicit in the murder of individuals there. And if we're able to get him on the program, we'll talk about what this means as a country that tells all the rest of us we have to abide by the laws. They don't seem to be able to keep that as a standard for themselves. The latest on health and nutrition, including ways that we can enhance our sports activity in a natural way. Also, for those who are concerned about the quality of your DNA, and also specifically having really healthier children. A lot of people spend enormous amounts of money going to fertility experts. I'll show you how to increase the likelihood of having a healthy child on this segment. Also, from our commentary sections today, reasons America spends more on prisons than on higher education. This is interesting from Alternet. Additionally, I'm going to talk about what happens when, as a nation, we literally become obsessed with honoring officialdom, the authority figures in our lives. We're obedient to that. Now think of the First and Second World War, the Vietnam War, the Korean War. Think of the Iraq and Afghanistan War. Think of the wars now that are all but certain in Iran. Think of all the ways that we've invested in bubbles, the Wall Street stock bubble, the 1990s, the housing bubble, the 2000s, the bond bubble today, the equity partnership bubble, the hedge fund bubbles. How do we do that? Well, it requires a certain blind obedience. So from Glenn Greenwald, a commentary on the perils of blind obedience. Also, time permitting, and I'm not sure we'll have that time, from the perspective of a professor, Vandana Shiva, who we've had many times on this program, the Hunger Games, the real Hunger Games, and what's behind it. Also from our issues, what's happening in Texas could be coming to a school near you. Mandatory tracking chips. Every student in the school system in one area is required, as of going back to school this next week, to wear a tracking chip. Never thought it would happen. It is, and I'll talk about that. From our environmental segment, we are writing the epilogue to The World We Know, John Acheson from Common Dreams. This is very important to me because when I began to do an in-depth analysis of where do we stand in relationship to our environment 7 years ago, and I took on the task of producing and writing a very comprehensive film on the environment, covering everything, and that's why it's taken so long, I ended up focusing upon the 12 tipping points, the areas that if something goes wrong, it's really bad. And now we have four of those that are tipping, and there's nothing we can do about that. Others we could do something about, but choose not to. Now others are finally awakened to this situation and joining voices, which is good. So I'll do a commentary on that, again, time permitting. Let us begin. First up, for all of you who do high-intensity athletics and exercises, maybe you just go to a gym and spin, but you put it up to its high pressure, greatest resistance, and you spin for maybe at the beginning 5 minutes, and you build it up to almost an hour. A, that's really good. You're burning a lot of calories. But in the end, you'll get tired, the muscles will get fatigued, you'll have that burn, lactic acid buildup. Well, there's some things we can do to enhance our workouts. One would be DMG, dimethylglycine. Another would be TMG, trimethylglycine. Then NADH, coenzyme Q10. D-ribose. All of these are important, and creatine monohydrate. We can add something else. Beet juice. Simple beet juice. According to a study by Dr. Cermak, Department of Human Movement Sciences, we can use beet juice as an ergogenic aid. Now, the first study found a significant improvement in the 10K time performance after 6 days of supplementing with 140 milliliters concentrated beet juice containing 8 millimoles of nitrate daily. And Cermak noted that nitrate, present in high levels in beet juice, was the most likely ingredient responsible for beet juice's undoubtable aerogenic effects. Now, dietary nitrate worked by lowering the oxygen costs at a given intensity during exercise, and as your muscles used oxygen more efficiently. So one more thing, just a glass of beet juice. I would suggest adding a combination of beet juice and coconut water together. For those of you who have heard that chocolate, about 2 ounces of organic dairy-free chocolate a day could help thin the blood and prevent a stroke, you're right. A new study published in the journal Neurology that looked at 37,000 men to investigate the potential links between chocolate consumption and the risk of stroke. This was led by Dr. Susanna Larson, and what they found was, quote, moderate amounts of chocolate each week could be associated with lower risk of developing a stroke. And here's what it says, quote, while other studies have looked at how chocolate may help cardiovascular health, this is the first of its kind to find that chocolate may be beneficial for reducing stroke in men. And she is with the Karolinska Institute in Sweden. Quote, interestingly, dark chocolate has previously been associated with heart health benefits, but about 90% of the chocolate intake in Sweden, including what was consumed during the study, is milk chocolate, she added. Quote, flavonoids appear to be protective against cardiovascular disease through antioxidant, anti-clotting, and anti-inflammatory properties. It is also possible that flavonoids in chocolate may decrease blood concentrations of bad cholesterol and reduce blood pressure, end quote. Now, here's my thoughts on this. The fact that they had a lower percentage of quality dark chocolate and more dairy is not a good thing. It's in spite of it thing. What do I mean? I mean that all of the studies that I have seen, which are over 150, show that the darker and higher percentage of dark chocolate, 60, 70, 80%, when you get up to 80%, you're getting into a bitter chocolate. That is what has the greatest protection for the heart. Now, I've done this many times in the lab. Take a person's blood and put it under a black screen microscope setting and do three things. First, film a person's blood fasting, meaning they come in the morning and they haven't had any food for 16 hours. And then have them take their blood and it's thick. Now have them drink a lot of water, maybe a quart of water over a period of an hour. Take the same test and you'll see that the red blood cells are more spaced. The blood is thinned out, diluted with water, which is a good thing, and that can help prevent clotting. So just being better hydrated, having more water each day, can help keep a heart attack and a stroke away. Then add in dairy. You can add milk or cheese and immediately take another blood sample. Let's say not immediately, but let's say till it has a chance to get into the system, maybe about an hour later, and you see these white streaks. That acts like a glue. That brings those red blood cells and clumps them together, aggregates them. That can contribute to a stroke. So that's why they had good results in spite of the fact that they had something bad in the system, which means that had they focused on high 80% organic chocolate, they would have had even better results than what they did. Now do a fourth thing. Have a fasting blood level, then take a lot of vitamin C with quercetin, vitamin E, or coenzyme Q10. Now, these all do something in common. They naturally thin the blood. Now, tens of millions of Americans each day take some form of statin drug or blood thinner or aspirin in order to prevent a stroke. Now, this is bad for two reasons. In fact, I just had a debate this week when I had my own echocardiogram and full EKG and full blood chemistry done that I do twice a year to make sure I'm in good health because of how often I challenge my body and take it to the limit by working sometimes 20-hour days, 7 days a week, traveling nonstop, one country 1 hour, next day I'm in another country for a different hour. And I'm not foolish. I understand that this is an enormous stress. Background radiation, the kind of microorganisms you get in a plane, the inability to sleep, all these factors, I realize I'm challenging. So I try to compensate using an ionic filter on a plane, taking a lot of antioxidants before, during, and after a plane, getting my body, I'll constantly detox. The key is detox. Keeping my blood as thin as possible, using green juices, green powders, antioxidants that I know keep it thin, because when you're up in the air a lot, you're far, far more susceptible to having thrombosis and clotting and a heart attack or a stroke. So I get a very comprehensive panel done, far more than what the average person would get. I mean, you name it, it's on there. Every virus, every bacteria, C-reactive protein, homocysteine, fibrinogen, all the different hormonal levels, free testosterone, TSH, all of them. And then I can see, am I in balance or out of balance? And to the degree that I'm out of balance, I have to correct it. So when I was discussing with the cardiologist this week what he would recommend for a person, he would say, well, if you always want to make sure you have good thinner blood, take a drug. And I said, why would you suggest a drug? Now, he didn't know who I was. He had no idea my background. And so I didn't want to tell him. I just wanted to see if I was an average patient, what advice I would get and what treatment I would get with no heart disease. What would I get with a very low, in fact, they did it twice. It was so low. They didn't realize that an athlete like myself is going to have a lower resting pulse rate. They're not used to seeing pulses in the 50 beats per minute, or to have blood pressure that's low by their standards, but healthy by what ideally should be. So I said to him, wouldn't it make more sense to establish that someone like myself and other athletes, we should be the norm, and everyone else should be measured against what we are, rather than considering those of us who train daily and train vigorously and don't smoke? I've never smoked a cigarette, drank alcohol, done drugs my life, don't eat meat, don't eat all these other things. Shouldn't we be a standard? And he shrugged his shoulders, and he said, well, yes, I guess you should be, but you're not going to be, because there's only a tiny fraction of people like yourself. He said, look, here's the reality. He said, I could tell you to take a drug to keep your blood thin, but let's say you don't want to take a drug. All right, so then go more natural. Take an aspirin. So I was waiting to see what else he said. And I said, I should take an aspirin? He said, yes. I said, but you are aware, aren't you, that though aspirins can lower the incidence of a stroke, they increase the risk of heart attack? And he looked at me and I said, aspirins cause over 24,000 known deaths each year from bleeding, intestinal bleeding and stomach bleeding. They also destroy folic acid, B6, B12, and vitamin C, all necessary to keep a lower homocysteine level. So if your homocysteine level goes up because you've taken an aspirin a day, your heart attack rate and cancer rate increase substantially, as much as 200 or 300%. Yes, you are correct. You can lower the incidence of stroke, but you increase the risk of death. I said, so how prudent is that? And then I said, have you ever heard of the power of natural blood thinners, such as green vegetable juices or green powders that can thin the blood? And because he was suggesting curcumin, or he was suggesting Coumadin. And I said, you realize the side effects of Coumadin are impacts upon your liver, your pancreas, and your kidneys. And I said, do you think that might be one of the reasons that we had such a high incidence of non-alcoholic kidney and liver disease today? And he said, well, it's possible. And I said, you are aware that green tea thins the blood. Vitamin C thins the blood more than an aspirin, but with no harmful side effects. And it also reduces the low-density lipoprotein fraction, which is a major contributor to heart disease. By taking in vitamin E from mixed tocopherols, gamma, delta, beta, and theta, and alpha, and then the tocotrienols, the same, as well as coenzyme Q10, you are keeping your blood very good position thin, all with health. Then here's what he said. This was the interesting part. He said, well, I got to tell you a secret. What's that? He said, I take the omega-3 fatty acids, and I take vitamin D, and I take a B complex, and I take some vitamin C every day. And I used to be a vegan. And for 20 years, I was a vegan and in great shape. And then my father got sick, and he died, and I got depressed, and then I just let myself go. And he said, I have to get myself back on a diet, because he was overweight and stressed. And he said, well, you know, for a lay person, you have a lot of insights. He said, but you're actually right. And I didn't say anything. I just thanked him for his time and left the office. And then I thought, what about all the people who would have gone there with nothing wrong, come out and started taking a blood thinner that could have devastating effects upon them over a period of time? And that's what's going on. So when the people did the study and said, okay, we can reduce stroke by chocolate, but our chocolate contains dairy, they should have then said, why don't we do another study with only dark chocolate without the dairy? And they would have had even a greater result. Next up, nutrition is linked to the sperm DNA quality. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Fertility and Sterility. And what they did, they simply examined the diet and sperm quality of 80 healthy men between 22 and up. And they found that older men, meaning older than 44, who consumed, quote, a healthy intake of micronutrients, had less damage to the DNA of sperm than those who did not. This was done by a Dr. Weibrecht at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. And here's what it says, quote, it appears that consuming more micronutrients such as vitamin C, vitamin E, folic acid, and zinc helps turn back the clock for older men. We found that men who consumed at least the recommended daily allowance of certain micronutrients had sperm with a similar DNA count as younger men. Yeah. Wow. Wow. What rock has he been hiding under? You think that maybe after 500,000 peer-reviewed published studies on the role of diet and supplements on reversing and slowing down the aging process, that you can do a little better than to say, take the RDA, the recommended dietary allowance, a little tiny amount of a few nutrients, and if that in itself is able to show an improved DNA, imagine what it would mean for those who are really, really taking functional food levels. Functional foods meaning you want to function in the body and you're taking those levels and variety to get that effect. Next up here, but again, at least it's there for people. The mini trend microgreens are more nutritious than mature counterparts. This is from Science Daily from the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. And here's what it says, quote, "The first scientific analysis of nutrient levels in edible microgreens has found that many of those trendy seedlings of green vegetables and herbs have more vitamins and healthy nutrients than their fully grown counterparts." Well, yes and no. Yes, they do contain a lot more nutrients. No, this is not the first scientific analysis. The first scientific analysis was published in an early paper I did on measuring the vitamin C concentrations in sprouts as compared to the fully grown vegetable. And the sprouts had 500% more vitamin C than the fully grown vegetable. And from that time, we have seen that the microgreens, the smaller, like 1 to 3 inches in height, harvested generally around 14 or 15 days of germination. These are what I'm suggesting people begin to eat on a regular basis. In fact, I'm suggesting people put a miniature greenhouse on their roof, in their backyard, and in that minimal environment, you can grow microgreens, 100 different varieties of sprouts and microgreens. And that way, 12 months a year, you have a high concentration of nutrients, tasty, delicious foods, inexpensive, and helping you with your overall health and nutrition requirements. And finally, one of the reasons that I keep telling people your public drinking water should be tested for a full spectrum of contaminants. And most don't do that. They only measure for certain ones, and certainly not the bad ones, like nanoparticulate matter of medicines. Because when people take a chemotherapy or AZT or a tranquilizer, all the different drugs we take, and statins, that comes out of the body through the urine or through the feces, goes into the septic systems, then goes into the waterways. That's where our drinking water comes from, much of it. And then we are told that our drinking water is clean because we use some chlorine or some fluoride. And fluoride really doesn't have anything to do with that, but the chlorine has a little to do with it. But even many viruses, bacteria, and parasites can still get through the system. Here's the latest. That's why you should filter your water. Quote, "Carcinogenic hexavalent chromium found in 1/3 of California drinking water, CDPH sued by environmentalists." I'll quote this from J.D. Hayes of Natural News. "A third of all drinking water sampled in California is contaminated with hexavalent chromium, a carcinogen, according to the latest research from the National Resource Defense Council, along with the Environmental Working Group. And they contend that the legislature ordered the state's top health agency to develop drinking water standards for the carcinogen by January 2004. But so far, the department has declined to do so. The suit claims the delay is unjustified and is asking the court to impose a faster deadline." So here's what we have to understand. Do you remember the movie starring Aaron Brockovich back in 2000? Well, hexavalent chromium is a known carcinogen and is a drinking water contaminant. And that is what's getting into all these people's bodies every day. And yet they did nothing to get it out, so they're suing to get it out. What else is in there that you didn't know? That's just one element. Also, Pfizer, you know, one of the big pharmaceutical companies that gets all kinds of good press, is the darling of the left and the right. They admit to bribing foreign officials, and they agree to fork over $60 million. That's about an hour's worth of income for them. Quote, "A Pfizer subsidiary admitted to bribing officials in Bulgaria, Croatia, Kazakhstan, and Russia in an effort to persuade these countries to approve the drug giant's products," the U.S. Department of Justice said. "Pfizer will pay a $15 million fine to end the Department of Justice criminal investigation into alleged violations of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Pfizer's subsidiary of Wyeth will pay the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission roughly $45 million to settle similar claims." Quote, "Pfizer took shortcuts to boost its business in several Eurasian countries, bribing government officials in Bulgaria, Croatia, Kazakhstan, and Russia to the tune of millions of dollars," according to Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General Remen. Okay, what does this mean? Absolutely, positively, nothing. Now, we have found that pharmaceutical companies collectively have been fined hundreds of billions of dollars, and not a single person's ever gone to jail for anything they do. Hundreds of thousands of people die because of their drugs, and they knew that these drugs were dangerous. So to pay a fine of $60 million, that is absolutely insignificant. Even $5 billion was insignificant with the payout over Vioxx deaths. I believe that we should hold every corporate leader and anyone in the chain of command, its board of directors, its officers, its lawyers, who knew, or scientists who knew, that a product that they were offering was dangerous and still allowed it to be marketed, they should be held on criminal charges and be facing a jury trial. But as long as every administration is more interested in seeing that corporations are protected because they're a major source of income for retired politicians, or their great little personal ATM machines for re-election campaigns, then they'll keep doing this kind of stuff. And why is it that they are not held to the same ethical tar and feathering anyone else? Anyone else breaks a crime, thereafter you're known as a criminal. They break the law every single day on Wall Street, the big banks, and the pharma, and nothing happens to their reputation. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing information. Now we're going to go to a few of our other issues, and then I'm going to open it up for calls before I go to my commentary. This is from John Acheson. It's called "We Are Writing the Epilogue to the World We Know" from Common Dreams. I'll quote, "The data continue to roll in, and they are telling us we are in the process of bringing an end to the world we evolved in and creating a new, harsher world. We will be forced to devote more and more of our resources trying to adapt to this new world and less on development. While politicians fiddle, the world burns. While the press plays he said, she said, the ice melts, the seas rise. In 1990, we could have averted this disaster and saved money doing it. As late as 2010, we still had a shot at avoiding it. But now, the die is cast. The future foretold. What follows would be an epilogue to civilization as we know it." And by the way, everything that he says here, I have independently already researched. It's in a major, major new book. It's over 1,200 pages already, and I'm not done yet. It's a sequel to Clearer, Cleaner, Safer, Greener, Blueprint for a New Environment, my first environmental book, and part of the 12 tipping points documentary I'm doing. Listen up. Here's what he says. Arctic sea ice hits lowest extent ever measured and is still melting. Hottest winter, spring, summer, year, decade ever measured. Most extensive drought in 50 years and getting worse. Worst floods in recorded history. Hottest seas in eons, most acidic oceans ever measured, most greenhouse gases released in a single year ever, highest sea levels since a Pleistocene age, most permafrost melted with record releases of methane ever measured, massive crop failures and record high food prices, most severe weather events ever recorded. Meanwhile, in Tampa, the fossil fuel-funded Republican Party is doubling down on climate denial, pushing greater use of oil, coal, nuclear, and gas, and trying to gut programs designed to save energy and use more renewables. In short, the Republicans are working diligently to hasten our demise. And no, that's not hyperbole either. What about the Democrats? Well, except for one mention of climate change in an interview with Rolling Stone, the president has been mum on the topic, as have most of the rest of the party. How about the press? Week after week, a record heat and drought brought nary a mention of global warming. It was as if people were dropping dead from bullets, but no one mentioned guns. Oh, wait. Bad analogy. That's actually happening. Okay, how about as if the nation were getting obese, but no one mentioned massive farm subsidies for fattening foods. Whoops, that's happening too. Oh well, you get the idea. And so the last chapter concludes, the story ends, only the epilogue remains, the part where we reveal the fate of the characters. But here's the thing, we are writing the story, but our children and their children's children will inhabit the epilogue. Imagine a world where vast regions of an acidic ocean are dominated by jellyfish, where nothing else will live. A world where tuna, salmon, halibut, swordfish, crabs, shellfish, shrimp, and the rest of the seafood we take for granted, the primary source of protein for more than 1 billion people, is virtually gone. Oh, and that might come with a side of oxygen depletion, you know, the stuff we breathe. Think of it as a planetary COPD. The land, an unending series of drought, flood, and fire famine. Throw in some disease, a little social chaos, with this million, almost 1 billion individuals becoming climate change refugees, desperately swarming the planet to survive. The coasts will be their own special blend of hell on earth. Ports will be abandoned. The richer countries might yet get away with extraordinarily expensive dikes, levees, and pumps for a while, but eventually even they will have been abandoned. Wicked storms will be routine. International trade will become difficult and unreliable. That is, assuming anyone has the social cohesion and political capacity to engage in global trade. This is the epilogue we are writing. It is all about the inevitable at this point. What Bill McKibben called global warming's terrifying new math. But as terrifying as McKibben's math is, it doesn't even consider the increasingly likely horror of methane releases from permafrost and clathrates. Methane just happens to be 72 times as strong a greenhouse gas as carbon dioxide in the short term and 25 times as strong over the long term. And there are 1.5 trillion tons of carbon trapped in permafrost and about the same amount in clathrates. Not to get all techno-geeky on you, but the people modeling the effects of this much carbon suggested it would be hell on Earth in the very near future. But in calculating the rate and amount of methane and carbon released from Arctic sources, they didn't even add in the effect of accelerated warming from the permafrost releases themselves. In other words, they looked at greenhouse gas emissions from conventional sources only, despite the fact that releases from methane feedbacks are equivalent to those from fossil fuels. So yeah, hell is coming, but it's coming a lot faster than any predictions you've seen so far from the scientific community. Now, as we're closing the book on civilization as we know it, yes, let's talk about how we can increase the production and use of fossil fuels. Let's serve up divisiveness, hate, and fear at a time when unity and courage are needed. Let's get guns into the hands of every possible frightened and hate-filled person so we can up the ante on chaos to come. Let's talk about gutting government, the only force capable of mounting a coherent response to this unfolding tragedy. That's the Republican platform. Democrats, they don't have one either. To the extent they do, it seems to be, we're not quite as bad as Republicans. In the press, they're busy hammering away at the epilogue. John Acheson is the author of the novel, A Being Darkly Wise, and he's published in the New York Times, Washington Post, and Baltimore Sun. Now, I would take issue on just 2 points that he made in his commentary. First, I believe that we should have the right to bear arms, not assault rifles. But I believe that what we have to fear more than anything else in the future is the tyranny of a government that is not tolerant or accepting of a public's right to speak out on issues of their own freedoms, where the government, as it has historically, and we should pay attention to the history lessons, in Brazil, in Chile, in China, in Russia, in Italy, in France, in Germany, when guns were forbidden and taken away, the criminals, the fascists, those of the paramilitaries always had guns. But anyone who wanted to defend themselves, who was a peaceful citizen, did not. And I believe this is a limitation in the ideology of those who believe that no gun is better than any gun. I would agree if no one had any guns. But the trouble is, there will always be guns in the hands of the militarized who are there to fear us, and we have no way of defending ourselves. Also, what happens in social chaos? Let me give you a picture of what I believe is about to happen. About now to happen. Right now. I believe that what you've seen in Colombia 10 years ago, that became the kidnapping capital of the world, and then moved over to Russia about 3 years after that, and then moved into Mexico, where it remains number one kidnapping capital of the world, using computer sophistication today never imagined in the past. A person makes a reservation at a hotel. They make it and have to pay for it and give information about themselves prior to arriving in the country. You have what are called the 10 percenters. The 10 percenters never consider themselves a part of any criminal activity. They might be a receptionist in a hotel, a cab driver, a limousine driver. They can be a tour operator. But they're the ones who, in the end, play a part, because the drug cartels have what are called eyes and ears. We're talking about millions of individuals involved in this, from the hundreds of thousands who are actually in the gangs, the heavy-duty types, the ones that actually, you know, act as the bad guys, the executioners. So you make a reservation, now they have information on your credit card, your passport, which you have to give them, and in a matter of a minute or two, they can find out everything about you. Are you good enough to kidnap? What do your parents do, your grandparents? Where do you work? Are you an important person where you work? Would your corporation likely bail you out? Or are you just a poor student or poor school teacher, doesn't have anything worth kidnapping to get in return? All that they have, then they pass that information on. Then you arrive at the airport at a certain time because they know your flight arrival. And they know what hotel you're in. And when you go out there, they can have the next 15 cabs waiting in line. So any cab you get in, that person takes you to a place that is other than your hotel. And then you're kidnapped. And then you're surprised. Why me? I'm not important. Well, you're not important, but your father is. And we think that your father would be willing to send us. We know how much money he has because we know where he banks, where he works, and we know how much money you have. Yes, you don't have a lot of money, but we're going to want $100,000. This happens every single day, without exception. It happens in Mexico, but it happens everywhere else. And you never hear about this. It's that sophisticated. Now, the people who arrange this, who provide information, they get 10% of whatever comes in. They're the 10 percenters. Never heard about this? Gee whiz, you mean the New York Times didn't get this story? No, they didn't get this story. For this kind of information, you actually have to have real contacts in real places, not be afraid to go to Mexico, as I've done, and go to Brazil, and go around the world, and talk with people outside of the latte-sipping cafes of the French Quarter. You have to do some real digging. I believe that we're going to see an epidemic kidnapping in the United States. I believe that it will be one of the most profitable and lucrative ways for criminals in the United States and gang members to make money. Who are they likely to kidnap? Who are they likely to, whose home they're likely to invade? Those in the urban area of Harlem? Nope. Nothing there. They've already exploited that. No, they're going to go out of the boroughs. They're going to go to the suburbs. They're going to go to those nice tree-lined cul-de-sac streets with 20 to 50 homes on them. And they'll know which people are there and which are single, which are old. Older people tend not to have anything to protect them, but they have gold or silver or cash stashed somewhere or in a bank. And 10% of all organized, 10% of all gang members now are former military. So they have a lot of skill in ambush and in reconnoitering. And so now, you're going to find hundreds of thousands of Americans put at risk of being kidnapped, and it won't even make the papers. Here's how it's likely to happen. You've lived for 35 years in your house. You don't have a mortgage. You're conservative financially, which is a good thing. I support that. But one night, at about 10 o'clock, and it's raining outside, and so nothing seems clear when it's raining, a truck pulls up on the side of the van. It's a cable repair system, and someone knocks on the door. You go to the door, you look out, and there's a person in a hat and a jacket and a little sign, and they've got a notepad, and they say, you know, we've got some problems in the neighborhood. We have to check your cable system. Oh, nothing's wrong with my cable system. Well, we have to. And the moment the person either resists, they push in the door, or they don't resist and open the door, now the person's in. Now three or four other people come in out of the car, and they tie the people into a chair, and they face each other, and they say, here's what the deal is. We don't want to hurt you, but we will. We know that you have money in the bank, and we want you to go to the bank, and we want you to withdraw your money. If you do that, well, since it was under duress, you're probably going to get it back from the bank. If you don't give us what you have now, then we will unfortunately be having to hurt one of you while the other watches. 99% of people are going to give up anything they have right then and there. They'll give up whatever they stored, but then it's the bank they care about, and then they will have someone out of camera range with their partner in the car while the person goes up and just keeps going until they've taken as much out of every ATM machine as they can. If it's a large amount of money they have, then they'll try to get the person to go into a bank and withdraw it, telling them they have someone beside them so they can't give any message. And then the gangs get away with money, lots of it, and there will be a high improbability that most people would want to report this because they'll be told if they see police or investigators coming to the person's home, then they'll come back and hurt them. Has this happened? Yes. Are you aware of it? No. Remember, there's always two realities, that which you are seeing and that which is happening that you're not aware of. We now have over 1.5 million gang members in the United States. I predict that within the next 3 years, it'll go to 5 million gang members. They will all have guns. Criminals always have guns. You won't. And you won't have thought about getting a security system for your house, including, if you can afford it, storm shutters that are really, they're bulletproof, but you put them down at night on your door and windows so nobody's going to come in. Hate to think of doing that? So do I. Unnecessary expense, but is it paranoia? It is no more paranoid to be confident that you can live some quality of life in the future, but you're going to have to be smart in doing it. We don't want to believe that our society is going to become a society much like others around the world have when they've run into economic crisis. But when you don't take care of the needs of 250 million Americans and you only focus upon the 70 million who are fine and will stay fine, those in gated communities, those in upper mobile and professional positions, those who are the technocrats, those who are the facilitator and the bureaucrats, those who are tenured and those who have a living wage, those people are fine, and they will be doing okay. It's everyone else that's going to get hammered. And it's from that group that you're going to have crime. So I would suggest that before we accuse anyone who supports protecting themselves in an unstable society that's only going to get worse, and where our government is increasingly encroaching upon our rights with no pushback by these very same people. If I saw the people who demanded gun control out there voraciously challenging in demonstrations in front of the Justice Department and the White House, our loss of freedoms, our loss of habeas corpus, their right to assassinate people at will, if I saw them being that strong, then I could have more support in the utter and complete hollowness and hypocrisy of their argument. And also, I'm finding these people are intellectually bankrupt. Our real scholarship from real research has shown that 95% of all shootings, mass murders in the last 20 years has been caused by people on psychiatric medication. Not once have they challenged the pharmaceutical interests, which they seem to support. Instead, they say it's the gun. Okay, let's say a person doesn't have a gun, so they hang themselves. And I've seen that. I've actually had that in one of my films, Drugging Our Children, where the woman came home and her 16-year-old son, a high school athlete, who was going through a breakup with his girlfriend, and his psychologist suggested a drug and got on the drug and committed suicide 2 weeks later. Are you now going to bang rope that they could hang themselves with? Or someone cuts their wrists. Are you going to bang knives that they could cut their wrists with? It is reasonable and responsible to ban any firearm that has the capacity to inflict damage upon other people except for what people have historically used, and that's not where most of the damage occurs. You completely disarm a public, you do so with gross ignorance of the consequences, especially the consequence of what's happening and will only continue to happen. Oh, I forgot, most of those who support this live in Upper West Side doorman buildings. Don't have to worry about security. That's nice. Come with me to the rest of America on some of the trips I take and say hello to the 99% of people who are going to be victimized by government programs, by the deindustrialization of our society, by the exploitation of commodities and the high price of food, by the loss and lack of proper health care and no prevention, by the manipulation of the mass media that they seem not to be protesting, that causes the diseases and the suffering and the dying. Let's just see. How many kids last year were diagnosed with adult 2 diabetes and heart disease? And compare that to how many people were killed from any other cause in the United States, teenagers. And you see, gee whiz, how did we miss that? Why weren't we protesting how our children are fed? The psychiatric drugs given 25% of all American women. Why didn't we pay attention to the 40 million Americans who have no homes? Why didn't we pay attention to 18 million children who are hungry? Oh, because our kids weren't hungry. Stupid me. Yeah, nice to be intellectually conceited and live with the hubris and arrogance and narcissism that is becoming unpalatable for a whole lot of us. And I'll put my name at the top of the list of people who no longer are going to sit by and allow what is qualified as social commentary to go unchallenged. Those are my thoughts. Now I'm interested in yours. Our number, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear from you on any of the issues that we have talked about here. And the only other thing I would offer as a different point of view from John Acheson is also, I believe that we can do something, but we cannot do it through reforming the Democrat or Republican platforms. We cannot do it by paying attention to their foolish and childish and burlesquing national political conventions. I believe that we must support those people who have the insight, the knowledge, the progressive attitude to make authentic changes to return America to Americans. And instead of he saying that our big government is what we need to fix the problems, then please, John, show me exactly which agencies of government, the big bureaucracies you're talking about, show me which of those have actually solved our problems. I'd like to see, since I study government and I study bureaucracies and I'm pro-government support for our actual needs and pro-regulation where it protects and saves us from harm, I'm adamantly opposed to assuming that any bureaucracy can self-govern without oversight and without regulating itself. Your thoughts. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. to have you with us, everyone. I'm going to go to your calls in just a moment. And if we come up to the normal 55-minute time in our program and you can't hear anymore because we're continuing on the Internet, you can go to GaryNull.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to hear on the Internet, or you can go to a phone service. I realize some of you are probably frustrated because you've tried and the lines are busy. That's because of all the 450 companies in the world and media companies. We're number one, and we weren't aware, and they weren't aware, the providers, that we'd have so many thousands upon tens of thousands of people, unique listeners, wanting to use this service. But they're expanding their web, their broadband width. That's what we were told. But that number is 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066, so you can listen anywhere in North America and Canada over the phone. Now, once a week, I take just 3 minutes to offer you a special, and that pays for all the expenses of this network. And what doesn't, I pay for the rest, so that no one else has to have any pitching at all. And by the way, starting next week, we have 22 brand new programs coming. We have Bruce Lipton, Rabbi Lerner, we have Chelsea Green, and Op-Ed News is Rob Call, and Yvonne Lindberg from Post Oil Economy, and Laura Flanders, Air America. We have, we're going to be carrying all the, and Utrice Lee is going to be on every single day. We have a ton of new shows coming, and I'll mention all of them next week. Lynn Saputo and is coming. Whole lot of good people coming. The best progressive minds in America are going to be on. Now, here's my special of the day. And it's a real good one because you're getting a tremendous savings. This would be $180. It's only $72 to you. So you're saving, wow, you're saving almost 60%. It's my detox formula. And this is a special formula. You're going to buy one, get one free. Plus, I'm going to give you my brand new video. I haven't even seen it. This is the newest extended version of Ozone, the miracle medicine. And this is where we went to Italy to film Dr. Bocci, the world's leading authority, and then down to the International Congress in Dallas, where all the top medical doctors and scientists in the world came for an Ozone conference. I just filmed them. That's in the film. All the best. Now, that you're getting for free, when you order a detox, you're going to get two of those. I put in apple pectin and buckthorn bark, yellow dock, solidia, sarsaparilla root, rose hip. I put in psyllium seed and prickly ash bark, Oregon grapefruit and orange peel, marshmallow leaf and licorice root, and kelp, and hibiscus flower, and golden seal root, ginger root, garlic cloves, fiber, fennel seed, a dandelion root, chrysanthemums, cascara sagrada bark, a burdock root, peppermint leaf, red clover flowers, and turmeric root, wasabi root, chlorophyll, 200 milligrams, and broccoli powder. So that's what you're getting. I mean, if you know of a better detox product in the world, get it. I don't. I created this, and it took a long time to create it, and I believe that we should use this for 3 months on, 1 month off, 3 months on, 1 month off, every night before you go to bed. So it is the best detox product I know of. You're going to buy one, get one free, plus you're going to get a free $40 video, Ozone, the miracle medicine, the brand new one, the extended version. And it's so new, I haven't even seen it. That's how new it is. I just got it yesterday. Call this number to get all this wonderful detox package, because ozone is one of the ways we detoxify ourselves and saves our lives frequently. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go over and see who we have on the line. We have Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I've got something interesting for you here. As you know, we were talking about, you've been talking about anger and, you know, standing up for what you believe. I have an interesting email here of someone who is standing by what he believes. And, you know, I think it was Mahatma Gandhi who said, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Well, I'm wondering where this guy is on the rung. His name is Ray. And he sent me this two-page, I guess I can call it a rant. He says, it's interesting that that you come out against eggs, even though back in the 80s when you wrote The Egg Project, you described them as a perfect food. He has a whole...
Okay, stop one at a time.
Okay, right? Go ahead.
Okay. First, he is correct. In the 1980s, I presented a paper at a packed auditorium on the east side, the largest high school auditorium I could find, and it was a three-hour presentation. It was called The Egg Project, and what had happened was that I had done research 2 years before, and it was by accident. And in the lab, I thought I was going to get from brown rice an amino acid pattern showing how incomplete it was. And instead, overnight, when I did the analysis, I saw that it was complete, and I said, well, I've made a mistake. So I left a message for Dr. Berman, and he worked in the daytime. I said, Dr. Berman, would you please redo this? I made a mistake somewhere. The next evening when I came in, there was a note that he posted, said, Gary, it was correct. And I said, well, it can't be. So again, I redid it, and again, I came up with the same results, that all eight essential amino acids were there. Again, I said, please run it by one of the other biochemists, and he did. And again, they all said the same thing. And then we had a meeting, and it was a Monday morning now, and it was at our staff meeting with about 17 different departments, and I was in the anti-aging and nutrition division. And I said, well, I'm really perplexed. We now can confirm that brown rice has all eight essential amino acids. But then I had two textbooks beside me, including Normal and Therapeutic Nutrition by Robinson that I studied when I was in dietetic school, and in clinical nutrition at Edison State in New Jersey. And I said, and here's another one. And this is what every nutritionist and dietitian in the America studies. And here's what it says. Only animal foods have complete protein, meaning all eight essential amino acids. And the highest quality net protein utilization is the egg. So from the egg being the highest source of protein that your body can actually absorb from a food, and then you go down through the beef and chicken and fish and dairy and pork. I said, if this is true, this could revolutionize all of nutrition science. But I have to do all the work on it. So over the next 12 months, I analyzed over 140 different foods, including fruits and vegetables and herbs, legumes, nuts, and seeds, and I found that all of them contained all eight essential amino acids. However, there is what is called the rule of limiting amino acids, which means that let's say you have seven amino acids that are 90% on a per point of perfection, and one that's 30. The body, if you had no other amino acids with that meal, would only use 30 of all of them. So therefore, what I did, and I did this with the Dr. Hildred Fiske at Mount Sinai, who took him another group of months, and my brother Stephen, they worked up a computer system where they printed out a match of limiting amino acids, which meant that by having a bowl of rice and a bowl of beans or some other combination, there were 5,000 combinations of normally consumed amounts of food, you could actually have more complete protein utilized than any animal source except the egg, but two of these actually exceeded the egg, which means that not only have we shown that we no longer ever again have to eat an animal protein of any kind to get our amino acids, our proteins, the building blocks of our cells, but we now have something that actually exceeded the highest net protein utilization, meaning the maximum amount of protein the body actually absorbs is from the egg. Hence, I call it the Egg Project. And I then established that there was a new way using spirulina and chlorella with almost anything else gave you higher than the egg. So what this was, it was a report. Now, I submitted this to peer-reviewed journals, the USDA, MIT's Nutrition Division, Harvard's Nutrition Division, the National Institutes of Dietetics. Every place you could issue a report, I did. Nobody would touch it. It took me 12 years to get it published in a peer-reviewed journal. It should have revolutionized all of health and nutrition. A, it could have revolutionized how we fed people in Africa, supported them in Africa, and the seeds, because now they could have grown seeds together that would have given them a higher rate of complete protein. net protein utilization. We could have also eliminated the $200 billion a year in animal sources. We could have rewritten the basic groups of foods we need on the pyramid, which I have done, which is on my site. I put up my own food pyramid. It's far more scientific and valid than theirs. And think of all the diseases and lives we would have saved. Millions and millions and millions of people today would be alive if they followed that advice. They would have had more phytonutrients, phytochemicals, antioxidants, high-quality fiber in the diet had they just followed that advice. Instead of eating the high heterocyclic amine animal proteins that have no fat in them, that can cause cancer, that increase blood pressure and increase clotting and increase diabetes and increase colorectal disturbances, but we didn't. And as I would later find out, when one of the peer-reviewed journals sent me back the manuscript and someone forgot to erase the notations in the columns, that they weren't about to accept this, even though they realized it was legitimate science. So my report in supporting the Egg Project, which later became a best-selling book with 22 editions, and literally put four walls, eight windows, small publisher on the map, which allowed over 80 other books to be published by other authors that weren't commercially viable, was to promote veganism, to challenge the rule of the egg as supreme, and to show we had something better, more economical, far less expensive, non-polluting, because you save pollution when you're not growing an animal for protein and you're eating a legume. You're saving water. So on every level, the Egg Project was a breakthrough, important project. So on that level alone, with that single argument, this person has shown that their interest in their attack is something on a personal basis, which is fine, but they really should have some sense of history, context, and scholarship before they begin their rant, unless they're a typical, you know, person who feels that they're angry with the world because someone else might have something they don't, in which case, sorry, friend, I can't help you about that. Okay?
Okay.
We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. And by the way, on Monday evening, 7 p.m., the Progressive Commentary Hour, we have a dynamic panel that you're going to be listening to on a topic that is long overdue to be discussed, and we're going to discuss it in depth, and we're going to go into it in a way that has not been gone into before. So I'm hoping that you'll all be with me on Monday evening, 7 p.m., when we take on why we feel we have this need for a war on terror and the creating a military-industrial spy complex, and some of the best minds in America are going to be on that panel. Have a nice day, everyone.